You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, December 13th, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Steeder, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Andy Campbell, reporter at HuffPost and author of We Are Proud Boys, how a right-wing street gang ushered in a new era of American extremism. Meanwhile, new inflation numbers show good news. The price increases were below what were expected. The bad news, what we did to treat it, did not touch the root cause. Corporate price gouging was essentially ignored. The Supreme Court will hear the challenge to Biden's student debt cancellation, they announced today. SCOTUS also refused to halt California's ban on flavored tobacco, which was a proposition that voters overwhelmingly approved in November. Talking Points memo has obtained text messages to Mark Meadows, chief of staff at the time, from dozens of members of Congress that show them brainstorming about how to overturn the election, including invoking martial law. FTX crypto exchange founder Sam Bankman-Fried went from sharing a stage with Bill Clinton to bankrupt and arrested in less than a year. He was taken into custody in the Bahamas and charged with 8 counts of fraud. And he's also dealing with massive civil litigation from the SEC.
More like Sam Bankman fraud.
Good. Lauren Boebert has won her re-election after a very suspicious recount. Where did those votes come from? The Mar-a-Lago server? Joke, I kid. But it would have been nice if she got ousted. Alas.
It's just good that now the Republicans will restore their faith in the election process.
Mm-hmm.
And say, like, oh, I guess these actually do. These aren't things that we need to
challenge. It shouldn't matter how long it takes. It's about getting the right result. I'm sure they'll be consistent on that. Trump's lawsuit over the FBI search for the classified documents at Mar-a-Lago is going nowhere. The Trump-appointed judge Eileen Cannon, who initially ruled in his favor, has quietly dismissed it months later. It was really just a delaying tactic, frankly. And she helped him. Israeli forces have shot and killed a 16-year-old girl in the occupied West Bank. Her name was Jana. She was on the roof of her building with her cat when she was shot with multiple bullets. Protests in Peru continue to rage over the ousting of Pedro Castillo. At least 7 have died in the demonstrations. We will have a report about what's going on in Peru from someone on the ground on Thursday. And lastly, Elon Musk has reportedly dissolved Twitter's Trust and Safety Council, the part of the company responsible for monitoring for hate, terrorism, child safety, and more. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the show, everybody. A reminder, Sam is out this week. He is on a cruise. We have still yet to hear from him. I want as many stories as possible, but, you know, he misled us all, saying that he would tell a long tale about what happened in Disney World. We didn't get that. So I'm not holding my breath on this one, but we should hold his feet to the fire. This is what accountability...
Release the Disney files.
Yeah, right.
I'm hoping we get at least a captain's log or two from Sam while he's on the high seas.
I mean, what happened... Like, all of these shows that monitor the stream and say how we're not forcing enough votes and stuff like that, they're not holding him accountable in the ways that matter. Mm. Right?
Forced to log.
Yeah, exactly. So he'll be out this week, but we have a great week of shows for you. Let's start here, because Talking Points memo, this was a pretty expansive reporting job here. And they use multiple sources. They obtain hundreds of text messages from former chief of staff under Trump, Mark Meadows, and dozens of Republican members of Congress. They include representative elect at the time, Marjorie Taylor Greene, but also Senator Ted Cruz, Mo Brooks, Jim Jordan, the regular folks, the usual suspects, as
also
you might call them.
Also a bunch of nerds,
them.
A bunch of New York Republican sort of fascist wannabe nerds.
That too. And they're... Why I think this is instructive is, one, I mean, we're going to see more of these messages because they were turned over to the January 6th committee, but Talking Points memo was able to get a lot of them. And they span from before January 6th to after January 6th to during January 6th. And they use, it's a window into the mind of the Republican representative, which is not too dissimilar from the crazy activists on the ground on the right, or the MAGA folks, who I think sometimes people in our press try to draw a line between that, you know, the people in power, they don't necessarily want to cave to the MAGA voters, to the Trump crazies, but they're, you know, with politics, baby, you just see that. There really is very little distinction. They believe the same kind of stuff. Here's Representative Ralph Norman of South Carolina. This was a text that he sent on January 17th, 3 days before the inauguration, multiple days after January 6th, after people saw what happened, saying, quote, "Mark, in seeing what's happening so quickly and reading about the Dominion lawsuits attempting to stop any meaningful investigation, we are at a point of no return." Looks like he used two emojis there.
Yeah, I wonder what emojis he used.
I'm guessing the red exclamation points or a siren.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could put some money on that. In saving our republic, our last hope is invoking martial law. Please urge the president to do so, in all caps. Asking the chief of staff to declare martial law, obviously.
Martial, like Marshall Mathers.
Martial,
two L's.
Well, I mean, I think in my notes I wrote
they
it down like
this.
That, so I mean, I'll forgive him for that. But like, that's a coup. You're saying, I want a coup. Please do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's after January 6th, when
like
I think that
days after.
You even had Kevin McCarthy afterwards being like, whoa, 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 this is too much. Mitch McConnell was in a standoff with the Trump administration as well. There were elected Republicans who were freaked out about it, but then the dust settled and they were still going to be a bit cynical and use it for their own electoral purposes. That was, I would say, the bulk of Republicans in the House and the Senate. But there's a still sizable chunk that was like, no, 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 January 6th was right. This was what should have happened, and we need you to go further and lock this thing down, declare martial law, and ensure that the coup actually happened. That's from Representative Ralph Norman of South Carolina. Here is Texas Representative Brian Babin writing to Mark Meadows after the 2020 election. This was on November 6th, saying, "Mark, when we lose Trump, we lose our republic. Fight like hell and find a way. We're with you down here in Texas and refuse to live under a corrupt Marxist dictatorship. Liberty, Babin."
Liberty.
Liberty!
It's so funny, like, you hear all the people that, you know, they make an entire cottage industry about liberal overreaction to, like, the Trump administration and hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
And you have actual Congress people that are every bit as sort of, like, out there and lunatic as, like, the craziest person you get on MSNBC.
I mean, much more so. Like, they wanted a corrupt Marxist dictatorship. Imagine genuinely believing that about the Biden administration.
It just, A corrupt Marxist dictatorship would do a little bit more for rail workers, I think.
perhaps, might even, like, broach the subject of some sort of single-payer option or universal health care. Biden, we're not even touching that.
Yeah.
None of that. It would be very cool if that were the case, but that's not the case. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, then just a representative-elect, sticking her mouth in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's mailboxes, and that's not a euphemism, just actually doing
that.
That
is accountability. Like to hold our representatives to account to the people.
Yeah, that's what she was doing in her lead-up to being an elected representative. This is her speaking at a Republicans gala here in New York the other day. This echoes a lot of the text messages that she was sending to Mark Meadows here. But speaking about January 6th, just another piece of evidence that for a lot of this group of Republicans, January 6th did not go far enough because it did not finish the job.
I come to Washington. I swear in on January 3rd. I get accused of giving insurrection tours, which I thought was hilarious because I couldn't even find the bathroom in the Capitol. True story. Then January 6th happens, and next thing you know, I organized the whole thing along with Steve Bannon here. And I want to tell you something. If Steve Bannon and I had organized that, we would have won.
Damn. Shot at the Proud Boys.
It would have been armed.
Imagine Ilhan Omar said that.
That's the whole joke, isn't it? They say that whole thing was planned, and I'm like, are you kidding me? A bunch of conservative Second Amendment supporters went in the Capitol without guns, and they think that we organized that? I don't think so.
There were guns found there.
Yeah. We are in the middle of the second seditious conspiracy case against the Oath Keepers. The Oath Keepers were storing AR-15s, boxes of ammunition. We also saw that there were bombs planted throughout and bomb threats made throughout Washington, D.C. on that day. So that's just revisionist history. She's also trying to claim that it was not planned. We know that there were like reconnaissance efforts mapping out the Capitol building so that they would be able to more effectively infiltrate it. Like, but that's her problem with it, was that it was not coordinated well enough. Because if she and Steve Bannon were at the forefront, they would have brought guns. So here we have it. We have martial law should be declared 3 days before Biden is inaugurated. We have right after the election essentially saying that it needs to be stopped because it's a corrupt Marxist dictatorship. And then we have Marjorie Taylor Greene, celebutante for the Republican Party, saying there, we should have had guns. That's the thing that was the problem with it. It wasn't planned better well enough. And they are just a part of the dozens of lawmakers, people in power, who were speaking with Mark Meadows at this time, attempting to coordinate a coup. This is what this looks like. And it's not histrionic to point that out. It's just the facts.
And this shit isn't, like, theoretical, like, in the sense that, clearly, I just mean in the sense that this stuff was not, like, teasing, like overturning the election results and inciting a riot. Like, this goes even further up than backbenchers like Babin and Norman, and then also like celebrity representatives like Marjorie Taylor Greene. Mike Pence was trying to figure out whether he could do this or not.
Yeah.
He wasn't consulting solemnly with Dan Quayle and Luttig, that conservative lawyer, about his options to make sure he couldn't do it. He was trying to see if there was a legal precedent for it, so he could do it potentially to satisfy his boss. Like, every Jeffrey Clark in the Department of Justice, if Jeffrey Rosen, the acting attorney general at that time, was more of a dumbass, he would have basically allowed this to happen, and Jeffrey Clark probably would have either like declared martial law or accepted or ordered Congress or something to either seize voting machines or accept alternate slates of electors. Like, there were many near misses and sliding doors moments that this shit just would have actually happened if certain people were a little bit more credulous, or if Mike Pence had was was spineless enough to just go through with it regardless of any sort of like penchant for my own honor to not to I solemnly having to do this. Like,
you're right that he was attempting to find a way to actually make it happen, and then there was just not the necessary support for him to make it happen on the day of January 6th, and there's people chanting hang him, mm-hmm. and then it all falls apart from there. But if they had a legal avenue, they would have done it. And like, this isn't a window into the desperation that was shared on that side.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, while we're all having to faff about with whether Trump should have been suspended after January 6th and whether that was a big sort of attack on civil liberties, I would just say I like to see Trump in jail for January 6th and a lot of these supporters too. I think like there's like this like sort of faux libertarian critique of the FBI thing or whatever that comes up. But if this was like a Latin American country, it'd be very clear what to support as far as like the state cracking down on right wing coup supporters. And I think we should do that in America. And I think more people should have been locked up for January 6th, particularly at the top. I would like to see more against Marjorie Taylor Greene to the extent that she continues to engage in this sort of thing. The Democrats should play some sort of hardball.
Well, it's a great point, because who are we seeing actually face consequences for January 6th? I mean, Trump got impeached, but did that affect anything with him? No. Yeah. No one in power is really facing any serious consequences for that. I mean, the Meadows interacting with some of these people and potentially Roger Stone being a go-between with some of these militia groups, we'll see how that unfolds. But from where we stand right now, the people that are bearing the brunt of the state and who are being prosecuted and who are being jailed, they're right-wing extremists for sure. But it's another example of people in kind of the middle pack of the country who are going to be the ones who get prosecuted, go to prison for this, when it should be people at the top. Marjorie Taylor Greene should not be in office. None of these representatives should be allowed to hold elected office because they tried to overturn the government.
I mean, Ron Johnson and all those people, there should be a massive investigation into the whole fraudulent electors thing, and people should be going to jail for that. That is what jails should be for. Like, we should, I think, like, go very far towards abolishing, like, the way police and the way they operate inside communities. But I am for having a carceral system for people who do crimes against democracy like this. And, like, we need to, it does need to be taken seriously. And that's why I've never been one of these people that is sort of, like, ho-hum about January 6th. Yeah, I don't trust the institutions that we are going to war with here, like the FBI and Congress. Like, they're going to F it up, and they're going to go, attack it at angles that are unproductive and unhelpful, because it's like, you know, bourgeois liberals and like a sort of a psycho government agency. Nonetheless, the work needs to be done, and like, to the extent that the public is aware of that, it should be supported.
Yep. All right. We are going to take a quick break. First, though, Sam will be with you from the past with some ad reads, and then we will head into a pre-recorded interview that I did. I did this with Andy Campbell. He's a reporter at HuffPost, author of the book We Are Proud Boys, How a Right-Wing Street Gang Ushered in a New Era of American Extremism. We did this interview last week in anticipation of the Proud Boys trial, which has since been delayed to the 19th. Still, though, pretty newsworthy. It's a great interview. Looking forward to you guys hearing it. But first, here is Sam.
Hey, folks. Couple of sponsors for the program today, and one of them is Henson Shaving. Henson Shaving is a family-owned aerospace parts manufacturer that has made parts for the International Space Station and Mars Rover, and now they're bringing precision engineering to your shaving experience. Look, there's a lot of reasons why you don't want to use disposable shavers, because, of course, all that wasted plastic, you got to buy all that junk. You got to store it in your drawer or whatever it is. For me, when I grew a beard, I didn't want to get, like, I don't need a subscription thing anymore. I'm not shaving on a regular basis. So what do I do? Well, I have found the answer. You know, part of the reason why folks have discomfort men and women for that matter, when they shave, is because the blades extend too far. That is like the secret, apparently. It causes the blade to wobble, and then, you know, you if you get more wobble, the more nicks and cuts and scrapes you get. A bad shave turns out not to be a blade problem, but it's an extension problem. So by using aerospace-grade CNC machines, which I guess are those like computer-driven machines, essentially, Henson makes metal razors that extend just 0.0013 inches, less than the thickness of a human hair. That means the blades are secure and stable, and they have give you a vibration-free shave. Check this out. Here it is. It's first of all, it's also really beautiful, and it's simple mechanism. This opens up. This comes off right here on the top, and you drop in a disposable razor, which is, actual razor blade, old school style. And the beauty of this means that you buy these razor, which are like literally like $3 to $5 a year's worth. And that's it. Once you buy this razor, you are done. Henson Shaving wants to be the best razor, not the best razor business. So you buy it once, you're done. There's no plastic. There's no subscriptions. There's no proprietary blades. There's no planned obsolescence. This is it. It's a beautiful shaver. And on top of that, I don't know if you can see that in there. It's got these channels that will let you evacuate the hair. So it's no more like going like this or banging it on the side of your sink. The Henson razor works with standard dual edge blades. Gives you that old school straight razor shave with the benefits of new school technology. Once you own a Henson razor, like I say, you buy these blades here, and it's about $3 to $5 a year to replace the blades. But you won't even have to spend that $6 to $10 because they're giving my audience a 2-year supply of blades for free. Just go to hensonshaving.com. One word, hensonshaving.com/majority. That's H-E-N-S-O-N, shaving.com/majority. You get a razor and 100-pack of blades in your cart. Then enter the code majority to get the blades for free. The link is in the description. Check it out, folks. Really a great shave. Also, second sponsor of the day. As you know, I am... I like operational security. I also try and avoid having my name and info all over the web. But I also get worried about identity theft. I opened a bank account for Mila recently, and bingo bango, I found out about it, that I had done it from Aura. Aura helps you fight back against those annoying websites that make all your personal information public because they automatically request removal of your info. This helps reduce robocalls, gives you some of that the sense of security. Also, Aura protects you from scammers and hackers. They scan the so-called dark web where criminals sell stolen information looking for your family's emails, passwords, social security number. This includes your kids too. And it alerts you fast if it finds anything. And it gives you real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries, like if somebody was opening up a loan or a credit card in your name, or maybe opening up another savings account at your bank. Like, why would you do that? Well, in this case, it was because it was for my kid, but good to know. Or it's got a VPN as well. It allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and personal information safe and encrypted. Or it protects your devices from viruses and malware and spyware. More so that the bad guys can't break in. Aura helps you manage what your kids can do on their devices. So you can get your kids pissed at you when you basically say, like, you're done with YouTube for the day, dude. Sorry. Well, you can't control that. You know what? Actually, I can. Sorry. You can also set focus time so that the kids know that you get a certain amount of time, and then bingo, you got to do your homework. Aura's also got a password manager. Lets you store and access your online passwords securely and conveniently. And here's the best part. You can try Aura for free for 14 days at aura.com/majority. When you put your emails in there, You may be shocked to find how much Aura finds that information is exposed online during this 2-week free trial. Check it out. That's aura.com, aura.com/majority to try Aura for free for 14 days. And as always, links will be in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Now, back to Emma.
We are back, and we are joined now by Andy Campbell, senior editor and reporter at HuffPost, author of the new book, We Are Proud Boys, How a Right-Wing Street Gang Ushered in a New Era of American Extremism. Andy, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Proud Boys, in the news a lot. I mean, let's start with the sedition trial. We're pre-taping this interview, but it's happening soon. I mean, Enrico Tarrio, former chairman, of the Proud Boys and a bunch of other members are being indicted for, I think back in June, for seditious conspiracy because of January 6th. We can start there in your extensive study into this like glorified street gang for right wingers.
Right. Yeah. It's an exciting time. And, you know, the Oath Keepers, the sort of, you know, sister militia group that did the insurrection with the Proud Boys. They just finished up one of their seditious conspiracy trials. Two of them were convicted on seditious conspiracy. But I think this trial is going to be super interesting because you have, unlike at the Oath Keepers trial, you have several high-level Proud Boys who have pleaded guilty already and have agreed to testify against their own. So you're looking at like a mob-style trial here. You're going to have these gang members testifying against one another. And we may learn, you know, on top of the planning that they did going into January 6th, more about their relationships to the GOP. I mean, they are friends with Roger Stone. I spoke to Stone for my book, and Stone was telling me that he'd been advising them politically and through their crimes for years. So, you know, we may learn through this testimony more about their relationships to the GOP, how they're getting their funding and continuing their violence today, despite a bunch of their leaders being behind bars and a bunch of their financial options being closed off to them. We're going to learn, I think, a lot through that. Plus, Gavin McGinnis, their founder, who has since Enrique Tarrio went to jail, taken back the reins very clearly. He is reportedly going to be a character witness for these guys, which is kind of ridiculous. Gavin McGinnis only recently brought Kanye West and Nick Fuentes on his show to hoorah for Nazis. So we'll see how that character witness goes. But it's going to be an exciting trial, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess before we dive into that, because I am particularly very curious about their relationship with Roger Stone. Mm-hmm. I know it's been hinted out in the January 6th trials and discussed, but to me, it seems clear that he was the go-between, and this is just conjecture, but for some of these militia groups on January 6th and the White House, and we can talk about that in particular a little bit later, but let's start as widely as we can. What are the Proud Boys for people who might be unfamiliar? Who is Gavin McGinnis? How did this far right group come into existence?
Right. The Proud Boys were built out of the audience of Gavin McGinnis's reactionary bigoted online talk show. Gavin McGinnis, a lot of people might know, also co-founded Vice Media. He was pushed out from Vice Media in around 2008, when his rhetoric, you know, he was the editorial voice for Vice, and his rhetoric was super bigoted, super misogynistic. One of the articles that he wrote, that was still up until I reached out to Vice asking about it, was basically a guide to date rape and getting away with date rape. This is the kind of guy Gavin McGinnis is. He gets pushed out of Vice, starts his own talk show, and doubles down on this misogynist rhetoric from, you know, the early aughts. He says, I'm going to bring this audience of angry men with me, and we're going to double down on this stuff. And while he's doing this, he's sort of building a gang live on his talk show. He's pelting them with bigoted tenets. You know, he believes women are, especially working women, are responsible for the decline of men. And you know, he's hyper-masculine, hyper-testosterone. He's also super anti-immigrant, white supremacist. He said that anybody can be here as long as you agree that white men were responsible for the success of the West. And so while he's belting them with this, he tells his audience, I want you guys to go out there and do what crusty old conservatives won't do. And I want you to fight, physically fight for Trump's causes, for the GOP's causes. And he built them, he gave them a rule set. He gave them a clothing options, with the Fred Perry polo being their costume, and MAGA hats, and he told them to go out there and fight. And they've been on a parade of violence ever since they first really started in early 2017, alongside, you know, Trump. So that's how, you know, the Proud Boys were first built, and they moved through the country at MAGA rallies, at, you know, any political rallies they could get a hold of, and they fought leftists. And Gavin McGinnis gave them a rule: you can't reach the highest rank here unless you commit a significant act of violence or get arrested for the cause. So there's that political violence in their rule set. And as they were going through, they've committed a number of really, really bad assaults, and they've gotten in trouble over the years. And so Enrique Tarrio, now on trial for sedition, he comes in about 2018 and decides we're going to become a more political monster. The Proud Boys were at the Unite the Right rallies in 2017. And Enrique Tarrio looked at that and said, if we're just kind of a hate group, we're just a fighty hate group, we're going to dissolve like all the other ones did after Unite the Right. We need to become more political. We need to run for office. We need to get in bed with the GOP. And so through Enrique, they did absolutely that. And now they are celebrated and their political violence so normalized that they're allowed to continue today despite being involved in January 6th. And so this has been a real evolution. But ultimately, the Proud Boys, you know, greatest success was normalizing their political violence to the degree where they are allowed to walk the streets today.
Well, and I just want to back up a little bit to McGinnis because, sure, you know, while you can see some of the writings that he did for Vice as a bit of a prelude or a test of the ideology that now we're seeing spread throughout the bro science right? Like, right. I mean, I could see it, hyper-masculine, reclaiming one's masculinity, basically being, you know, reactionary and owning it and having this militance about you. There's a lot of that kind of thinking, I think, and branding that has spread throughout the right. And you even see it, like a softer tone of it on Joe Rogan's podcast, for example. But like that McGinnis really did pioneer some of like this new wave of right winger and branding in the far right in this country.
Absolutely. And it does start with that misogyny. I mean, they are obsessed with this idea of testosterone. It's why they have rules like their second degree initiation, which requires that you do not masturbate unless you are within several feet of a woman, because they believe that not masturbating will raise your testosterone levels. Now, that is based on bunk science. It is as embarrassing as it sounds, but these guys really believe in that. And they believe that they are, you know, becoming better fighters because they're adhering to these rules. But to your point about, you know, Gavin being a little like Joe Rogan, the only difference between Gavin and Joe Rogan is that where Joe Rogan sort of brings on a, you know, an extremist onto his show, kind of fights back a little bit and then says, you know, I'm not responsible. Gavin McGinnis celebrates that. And, you know, I can only imagine what would happen if Joe Rogan turned to his audience and said, get out there and fight for me. It would be a lot similar to what Gavin did. And in fact, I mean, Joe Rogan is the first one that gave the Proud Boys their big platform.
That too. Right. Exactly.
So yeah, it all starts with this misogynist rhetoric that was in comedy back in the early aughts. Gavin was friends with people like David Cross and Sarah Silverman. He was big in the sort of New York comedy scene. But where they sort of
Sam knows off, him, Sam's yeah, either, right?
I'm sure. I went to a media party the other weekend where everybody was hanging out with him at his house back in the day. But the rest of the world evolved and decided, hey, this isn't for us. And Gavin doubled down. And that's kind of where the difference comes from.
And so he started this group. You mentioned some of their rules, and they adopt a certain kind of like militaristic brotherhood philosophy, which it reminds me of when I'd hear about rules that fraternities had in college. That being a way to kind of fuse people together, and hazing would be involved in that as well. It's very similar, like this kind of stuff. And what also is a hallmark of the Proud Boys is that their rules and the way that they maybe present to the public is steeped in irony. And we see this being a hallmark of like the 4chan irony right-wing bros, and also just plausible deniability and secret messages within what they're conveying to people. Can you talk about that dynamic in particular within this group?
Absolutely. You talked about the 4chan generation. When the Proud Boys rose among all of these really weird online groups, the reason why they were super concerning when I was out there in the field reporting at MAGA rallies is because they, unlike their sort of weird, you know, Pepe the Frog brethren on the field, didn't want to hide behind anonymity. They wanted to show their faces. They wanted to talk to the press, and they wanted to position what they were doing as, you know, as patriotic, as political discourse. And then when they got in trouble, they would position what they were doing as a joke. None of what Gavin says is serious. And so they are very into the propaganda game. And it's done very well for them. I mean, they want the public to believe that they are a fraternal drinking club, that is known to defend itself when it's reluctantly pulled into violence. Of course, that's not true, because Gavin McGinnis publicly says, get out there and fight or you can't rank up. But it's been very successful. Not only does a swath of the country believe what they're out there doing today is patriotic and in defense of some pillar of patriotism, but the press and even government agencies have not figured them out. I mean, after January 6th, an outgoing DHS official said they believed the entire time leading up to January 6th that they were just a fraternal drinking club that got out of hand from time to time. That just shows a success despite hundreds of hours of Gavin very clearly looking into the camera and saying, get out there and fight for GOP causes. So it doesn't take much in the propaganda game to really sort of position yourself as something more political, more constitutionally protected than, say, neo-Nazi group that's out there to exterminate people. But that's what the Proud Boys have done.
Yeah, I mean, so what are some of the rituals that they engage in that kind of bond them together? I mean, I think I read somewhere, you know, you like or McGinnis proudly likened it to the Knights of Columbus, right?
Right.
I mean, these are creepy, I think, to normal people, but for a group based in misogyny where they're like attempting to cosplay as tough guys, being a knight and being an armed protector of American might, they're kind of that makes them feel good. So what are some of those rituals?
Right. Well, you know, to start, I mean, Proud Boys gatherings are basically, giant frat parties in which Gavin McGinnis sits at a bar while everyone, you know, rips lines of coke and drinks as much beer as possible. Gavin McGinnis is reading from Pat Buchanan's Death of the West, and, you know, which is red meat for white supremacists.
Oh, God. What a terrible party. Right, Everyone's coked out reading white supremacist literature. Fun for the family.
No women allowed either. So, you know, it's just the boys for this.
So that means no masturbating. I got that rule down.
Absolutely not. But these are that in itself is sort of the extent to which this is exactly what Davin says it is, which is a fraternal drinking organization. But at those rallies, they are planning for their next rallies in which they are going to go into the field and fight, leftists or anybody who shows up to counter them. Now, through this, there are a lot of rituals like the no masturbation rule that are hyper masculine and super embarrassing. That same rank, the second rank that you cannot masturbate in, is attained also by being surrounded by other members of the Proud Boys and being punched repeatedly by them until you can name five breakfast cereals.
So that's literally right.
Yes.
This is a fraternity. Okay.
And it's totally ridiculous. It looks embarrassing. There are YouTube videos of this. There's like guys with their pants falling down, like the smoke from their cigarettes getting in their eyes while they do these weak-willed punches. It's all just super embarrassing, but it does several things. Gavin says, you know, it's going to gear you up for fighting, but what it really does is it puts you, in public, where you are sort of swearing fealty to this group. I mean, getting into the Proud Boys is very easy, but getting out once you've publicly adhered to this, it's not as easy. And so, once you're in, and it's, you know, you are going to get identified as such very, very quickly. Because again, they rarely hide behind anonymity.
And also, like hazing rituals, just to interject, it's meant to break you down until you're more susceptible to brainwashing. Not that the guys joining this already didn't have these proclivities, but it makes you an even more absorbent sponge.
Right. Absolutely. And when those few guys who decide, hey, I want to get out of this, probably have some political violence in a very public way under their belt and, you know, an adherence to a group that has neo-Nazis among its ranks. It's not going to be easy to get out of there. So you're absolutely right. I mean, the third rank beyond that is getting a Proud Boys tattoo. So it's really just going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. But ultimately, the Proud Boys are the tip of the spear in terms of this entire extremism problem. And they have wormed their fingers into all other facets of our extremist crisis. And so you have Proud Boys that are neo-Nazis. You have Proud Boys that are, you know, part of anti-immigrant groups. And it sort of swells and branches out that way. All sorts of Proud Boys under this one banner of political violence.
So you mentioned there being actual Nazis in the Proud Boys, and calling the Proud Boys just Nazis, you want to be careful just to make sure that the word Nazi is used with that it's used proportionally and that it is not kind of watered down in the right way that it's consumed by people who are reading the news. Like being a Nazi is a very serious categorization. And yet there are, like, it's close what they're advocating for. So, I mean, what's the relationship with just straight up neo-Nazi ideology in this country?
Yeah, I mean, they follow a lot of the same tenets, and they are likened to brown shirts even by court judges that are sitting in front of them. There is absolutely the comparison to be made, but you are right that it's more nuanced. They are happy to invite neo-Nazis with them, and they often show up with neo-Nazis at rallies and at, you know, quote unquote groomer events where they're attacking drag queens, which we can talk about shortly. But, you know, again, Gavin McGinnis said, and this is why there are people of color among their ranks. Gavin McGinnis says, you know, anybody can join as long as they agree that white men were responsible for the success of the West. And as long as they are with us against our enemies, the enemies being the left or whatever Tucker Carlson or Trump point their finger at. And so it kind of plays into their hand as well to you know, call them a Nazi group, because then they push someone like Enrique Tarrio, you know, Afro-Cuban American, in front of the camera and say, how can we be Nazis if we have people of color in our group? And they're very good at positioning their very few people of color in front of the cameras so that they can say that. But there are white supremacist tenets here. But there are also, you know, they are anti-immigrant, and they are pro-political power. And so they are, I would liken them closer to the KKK at the height of their power. Mm. Just in the sense that, you know, they have the political power. They're going into school boards and political meetings. And of course they are, you know, committing acts of violence against their enemies. But ultimately, you know, it's the media looking at the fact that they can't use a small soundbite to describe these guys as a white supremacist group or a neo-Nazi group. It's totally bamboozled them into silence. And that's another tactic, that they've used to sort of normalize what they do. If you can't pin them down in one soundbite, then you're just not going to talk about them at all. And that's largely what's happened until January 6th.
And not to rant about the media, but I feel that sometimes there is an unwillingness to see what's plainly in front of them, because they're way too deferential to the usage of irony and trolling. It's like there's no literacy for that. I mean, frankly, when the mass shooter in Colorado Springs said, I identify as they, them, there was, and that was the lawyers, this is a kind of an aside, but it's a part of the same ecosystem. The lawyers representing the mass shooter said this in the court filing, oh, please use they, them pronouns, and everyone says, shooter non-binary. It's like, do you have any understanding of how this like right wing actually operates? Because that is a textbook trolling move, and these right. kinds of people, the Proud Boys, are very, very similar in the way that they operate.
And we, you know, a lot of the mainstream media still hasn't figured out basic platforming. I mean, if you bring on a Nazi or Gavin McGinnis onto your show with millions of viewers and you fight back, he's not looking to win over your entire audience. If he can get 5 or 10% of them to go, hey, maybe this guy isn't so bad, or what he thinks I agree with, that is a win for him. And so when, you know, I write in my book, ABC News goes into Gavin McGinnis's house, puts soft lighting on him and his wife. His wife is making sandwiches in the back of the shot. And they're asking questions like, are you guys violent? And he's going, no, we're not. And of course, we have so much evidence that you could just use on your show if you wanted to, and not have to ask that question, because we know the answer to it. But instead she gave her platform over, to Gavin McGinnis, who took the reins of her story and lied on her show. And it makes you a terrible journalist to allow that to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there also is this, was McGinnis a part of Barry Weiss's profile? I'm just like making sure that was the case.
No,
he was not. An intellectual dark web member, but adjacent at the very least.
Absolutely,
they are given this like bad boy kind of branding at the outset, and then people realize, oh, it's just like they're just far right wingers, and that's how that there really is no new way to kind of spin that.
And he's super charismatic. And so he's really good at pretending that he's not what he says he is directly to the camera on his show.
Right. Let's talk a bit more about their recent targeting of drag shows and Drag Time Story Hour, because immensely concerning. We all know here, if you listen to the show, that far right violence and political acts far exceed that of left-wing extremist violence. It's a massive problem in this country, and certainly a group that is politically motivated, misogynistic, which inherently turns into homophobia and transphobia, that they are prime suspects for this kind of stuff, and they have been targeting drag shows across the country with intimidation and threats. Can you talk about that recent wave of Proud Boy activation?
Absolutely. After January 6th, even though a lot of their leaders sit behind bars right now, you know, the Proud Boys are working as function, and they are there to mobilize on right-wing grievances. You know, in 2020, it was BLM. A lot of times it's Antifa. Early this year and into the summer and into today, the right-wing grievance has been all of LGBTQ and drag specifically. And so the Proud Boys see themselves as being called upon to go and fight what they call a threat across the country. And so the Proud Boys are creating this groomer discourse, flooding the narrative as much as possible with groomer discourse, getting quoted on media, pushing it out on social media. You know, basically what their plan is to flood the narrative so much with the term groomer that all of LGBTQ and drag are eventually seen as this kind of inherent threat. When, listen, I was raised as a young kid in theater programs and music programs by drag queens, and they are wonderful for communities. I should put that out there right off the bat because we don't often talk about that enough. But the Proud Boys are going into communities that are having these drag shows for long, long time. They've had these drag shows, and they are trying to harass them beforehand to get it shut down because, of course, the Proud Boys and their allies' mere presence is the threat of physical violence. And so they find it a success if they can shut these things down before they happen. But then if that doesn't work, they show up with guns, with other weaponry, and with neo-Nazis, with members of Patriot Front and other extremist groups, and they harass people. Columbus, Ohio, Patriot Front joined Proud Boys, joined armed militiamen, even after a show was canceled, to go into this community and scare them into to not letting this happen again. This being a family-friendly drag event at a church. And throughout the summer, every drag event that they can find, they are sending out militiamen. In Nevada, they sent out a guy to a public library where a drag queen story hour was happening, who was holding a rifle, sent kids and their parents scattering, thinking that there was going to be a mass shooting there. And so what we're seeing is, you know, the right-wing discourse at work. The GOP has never rebuffed any of its fascist militants ever. And so we are going to see this at all facets of American civic life, not just drag shows. These guys have responded to row demonstrations. They've gone to children's hospitals where trans issues are being discussed. You know, they've obviously gone to the Capitol and voting polls. And so we are going to see the Proud Boys and other politically violent elements show up at all forms. Whatever the GOP is grieving about that day is where we're going to see them. Right now, it is brutal for the LGBTQ community in that regard.
And I mean, this is the one of the hallmarks of this kind of group. And no one is necessarily no one is safe unless you are a part of their ideology, and they're always going to try to weed out subversives or leftists or groups that are being marginalized by society and ensure that any hierarchies remain or regress to years before. And that's the role of these kinds of militant far-right groups. For a president like Donald Trump, when he's trying to steal an election, perhaps that role was also useful for him. And I wanted to dive into that a little bit with you. What connection do you believe, and through your reporting have you uncovered, as much as you can say, that Trump has directly with groups like the Proud Boys? I said this at the start of the interview. Roger Stone is clearly friendly with Enrique Tarrio, who's going to prison for seditious conspiracy. And my guess is that that's not where the connection ends with the GOP, Trump adjacent people, and the Proud Boys.
It's certainly the most public, but it's also, you know, Roger Stone has long served as their closest vector to Donald Trump. And we know, you know, Roger Stone admitted to me after January 6th that he'd been advising them politically. He'd been showing Enrique Tarrio, who he considers his friend and mentee, you know, how to get into politics, how to, you know, change your look to the public as something more political. Even if you're running for small offices, he helped Enrique to get these guys to run for offices big and small so that they could hold some more political power than just this sort of violent atmosphere. And so he still considers Enrique a friend. And we know, through court documents that Enrique Tarrio and the leader of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, were on a, you know, text message with Roger Stone on January 6th, a group chat called Friends of Stone. So they were in communication with him up to, during and after the insurrection. And we know that Roger Stone was in contact directly with Trump and with other, individuals in his orbit, people like Mike Flynn. And so certainly that connection has from, I think, 2017 on, created, given the Proud Boys their political power, early and often, right? So it's through that relationship that Enrique got close to, all sorts of GOP officials. I mean, they did security for, Matt Gaetz. They did security for Ann Coulter a number of times. And in fact, I don't know if your listeners know Ann Coulter. She's a gremlin, I think is, but she wrote after January 6th, a blog titled Thank God for the Proud Boys, and sort of wrote this sappy love letter to these guys for providing security at an event in which she says, you know, Antifa came from the hilltops to attack her, which of course wasn't true. But it's, you know, it's through those relationships that they have normalize themselves to the point where they can continue to, you know, commit these acts of harassment and violence, despite their involvement in January 6th. And it's the reason why people haven't rebuffed them, and certainly why Trump hasn't rebuffed them. I mean, you talked about how, you know, it was convenient for Trump. He's got to be happy, that he has foot soldiers in the street for him. He certainly has never rebuffed them, and he sent out federal troops to attack their enemies in political protesters in Portland, Oregon. So
stand back and stand by. Right. He said that at a debate in, yeah. Well, like, you know, it was a question posed by the moderator. What do you say, the Proud Boys, something to that effect? And he's right. Directly addressed them instead of condemning them. And right. For groups, like if you have any, again, back to having familiarity with how these right wing groups operate, they speak in code in their bylaws and in the stuff that they publicly face, publicly present to the world. So Trump saying stand back and stand by is, like mother's milk to them. I mean, they totally understand what that means because that's exactly how they operate. They thrive off of someone like Tucker Carlson or Trump speaking in code because they feel like they are a part of some like secret military operation, and it allows them to conceal their true misogynist or white supremacist roots at their purest form.
Absolutely. And they've been on this parade of violence for Trump very loudly saying, we're doing this for you. And he has never rebuffed them. And so you can argue that when he said stand back, stand by, that he didn't mean it or that he can't put a sentence together. So he's not responsible for what he says. But you're right. The Proud Boys took it as marching orders. They started preparing for what they were calling at the time civil war on January 6th, their last stand for Trump, and never has Trump sort of told them to tamp it down. And during that moment, he made them ramp it up. So they're continuing that today. But it's not just on the word of Trump. It's on the word of the entire GOP. And so, you know, if the GOP goes back to women as its prime target for, you know, over abortion, they're going to be at Planned Parenthoods across the country. They're going to be attacking women in the street. If he does it to press, he's going to be attacked. They're going to be attacking the press. I mean, this is what the right wing political discourse looks like now. And the Proud Boys and their allies are, again, the tip of that spear.
Lastly, I really just was hoping if I could ask you a bit more about the Proud Boys running for office, because you spoke about how Roger Stone was speaking with Enrique Tarrio, other Proud Boys potentially trying to give them some advice on how to run for office. Roger Stone has done this for decades. I mean, he is a truly evil man, in my editorially speaking, but yet he's effective. I mean, he's touched almost, I think, every, if not close to, Republican administration since he's been in the business as a young man in this field. And from the Bush election, his hand in drumming up kind of right-wing grassroots-ish or astroturfing sentiment about the stopping the count in Miami in order to ensure that Bush was elected. Like, he has his hand in a lot of these historical events. He's like a far-right Forrest Gump to a degree. Right. And now he's making his presence known with the Proud Boys on an electoral level, and they're starting small, which right. actually concerns me more, because that's a lot more insidious than, say, if they were to run for Congress and there'd be more of a spotlight on it.
Right. And Enrique Tarrio ran for, you know, for U.S. Senate. But, you know, none of these guys, you know, very few, if any, are U.S. Senate material. And I'm not really worried about that. But you're right. You know, it's through their connection to Roger Stone that they were emboldened to take six seats on the Miami-Dade Republican Party. And they have, you know, gotten their little pocket of power in the place where Enrique met with Roger Stone in the first place. It was just, you know, recently revealed that a Proud Boy, a very violent Proud Boy who's been at a number of their rallies attacking people, is now the vice chair of the Clackamas County Republicans in Oregon, the third largest county in the state. And it's through these small little pockets of power that they can do things like, you know, change the rules at local school boards, you know, create this voting block for locales. And with that, they can use that to sort of draw fire from themselves and make themselves more of a political monster, so they can get out there and do what they want to do, which is to sort of brown shirt their way into fighting for Republican causes. And so when they, you know, when they get under criminal heat, they can go up and say, well, look, we've got all these, we are running for office. We're legitimate. We're taking part in our communities. And so what we are doing out there in the street is actually protected speech. It's not political violence. And that's been very effective. And so you are right to say that these small seats are very concerning to extremism experts, because it doesn't take much to get a small pocket of power and turn that into something more.
Well, a lot to look out for here, and your book is coming out at a great time.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for the country, but just in terms of educating people about the Proud Boys. And hey, just if you're voting or if you're politically active in your community, check out the connections for some of these Republican candidates, some of the groups they're associated with. Very concerning that they're making those kinds of gains in Miami-Dade.
Do your homework for sure.
Yes, exactly. It shouldn't fall on people to do that, but still do it if you can. Yeah. Andy Campbell, senior editor and reporter at HuffPost, author of the new book, We Are Proud Boys, How a Right-Wing Street Gang Ushered in a New Era of American Extremism. Andy, thanks so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having this important conversation.
We are back. We are back. I hope that you enjoyed that interview. And with that, we are going to wrap up the first hour of this program, a program that relies on your support to keep itself going. So go to jointhemajorityreport.com if you love the show, want to support it. We'd appreciate any support. Would be great. Keep us surviving, thriving, all that good stuff. We're going to go into the fun half. Not sure if we will take calls. We might just go deep dive into clips today because we got a lot of good stuff. But Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning tonight?
Left Reckoning, we have comedian Mike Racine on to react to Dave Chappelle and Elon's little comedy thing. I'm going to be talking to him about whether, you know, he's had any very wealthy people in his audiences, if he thinks about ending sets with things like, "I hope your pursuit of happiness sets you free," like Dave Chappelle did. Freaking nerd. Yeah, patreon.com/leftreckoning to access that tonight.
And on ESPN, Bradley and I, well, today we have the semifinals in the World Cup, right? Have they started yet? No, because I guess the first game's at 2. Yeah, and then Morocco and France play tomorrow. We spoke briefly about that, but mostly yesterday's episode was me dancing on Brady's grave. Also, me being right the whole time about Tua versus Herbert, also doing a victory lap there, plus much more if you want to... suffer through the insufferable, go to youtube.com/ESPN show. Check that out. And then later in the week, Bradley and I still nearly tied after a competition or season-long competition against the spread with picks in the NFL. So check us out, youtube.com/ESPN show. All right, folks, we're going to head into the fun half now. See you there.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, no. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. 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 Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs, they look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what? What? Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back. Back, back, back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Africans are black, black, alpha males are black, black Africans are back, back.
Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am in total pussy.